That word today is found in Song of Solomon, chapter 5, verses 9 through chapter 6 and 3. What is your beloved more than another beloved, O most beautiful among women? What is your beloved more than another beloved that you thus adjure us? My beloved is radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. His head is the finest gold, his locks are wavy, black as a raven. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water, bathed in milk, sitting beside a full pool. His cheeks are like beds of spices, mounds of sweet-smelling herbs. His lips are lilies, dripping liquid myrrh. His arms are rods of gold set with jewels. His body is polished ivory, bedecked with sapphires. His legs are alabaster columns set on bases of gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet and is altogether desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. Where is your beloved gone, O most beautiful among women? Where has your beloved turned, that we may seek him with you? Culture can be so seductive. Our title today is The Harem's Seduction. And part of that seductive power is within the harem. We lived in the greater Chicago area when our kids were approaching their teenage years back in the 90s. There were so many pluses to being in Chicago. We had our kids in some great sports programs, Little League and baseball, soccer, basketball. It was also the heyday of Michael Jordan and the Bears and the beloved Chicago Cubs. It was a sports lover's paradise during this time, and at least for me and for our kids too. And we very self-consciously dragged our kids through the museums and the zoos and the gardens and the ballparks in Chicago, of which there were some of the best in the world. There was great food and music and architecture and people too. We have, still have so many great friends in Chicago. But we eventually found the dark side of that culture too. And that was overwhelming for us. Especially for our oldest, Rachel, who was 10 at the time. And she, more than any of the other kids, was a social creature, vulnerable to the peer pressure of her friends. And they were becoming one of the most important influences in her life, of course, as they do in every teenager's life, some more than others. It was also the heyday of the rock and roll harem, with harem whores like Madonna and Britney Spears leading the way as role models for young girls. Their CDs, videos, movies, ads, fashion were everywhere. All of Rachel's friends, at least it seemed that way to us, had them and obsessed over them, even some of her Christian friends. And most insidiously, of course, along with that culture came the morals and values of the rock and roll harem that undercut everything we were trying to achieve for them as Christian parents. We felt outnumbered and outmatched in Chicago, a place where all of this flourished and glistened and flashed like magical gaudy baubles in the hand of a hypnotist. We remember the day we decided to leave. John was seven, and he had a little ducktail piece of hair on his neck, and he was walking around the house talking out of the side of his mouth like Al Capone. We both looked at each other and said, "That's it, we're leaving." Long story short, we relocated to Idaho to plant a church. It was the best move we ever made. Not the least of which reason was escaping that cultural pressure cooker of the rock and roll harem on our girls. That didn't go away completely. It never does, really. But it was made more manageable, if you will, in this conservative region. More conservative culture, anyway. And today we see the same kind of harem culture attempt to seduce Shulamith. Times change, cultures evolve, but the moral and ethical issues remain because human nature remains fundamentally the same since the garden. The temptations are so often the same. So those of you, you know, with kids in your laps and by your sides here, you have a bit of time yet to influence them and shape them. Take a lesson from Shulamith. That woman with the same consonants as Solomon, but a great deal more wisdom than Solomon, we're seeing, right, as this book unfolds. From verse 9, chapter 5, the harem's seduction. Solomon has had his first shot at her, unsuccessful. Now the harem girls, the peer pressure. The harem's seduction, it's their turn. And they say to her, if men are six of one and half dozen of another, why oblige us to swear you to this shepherd boy? Now, our text today is one that's in direct response. If you remember from last week, it's in direct response to Shulamith's song to her shepherd boy and her closing adjuration to the harem girls to bear a message to him. I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him I'm sick with love. You remember from last week, too, as you maybe cast your eyes over the text from last week, through the creative device of the dream sequence, our second occurrence of the dream sequence, a very clever, a very creative device. We saw how intimate and passionate were the thoughts and feelings of Shulamith and her shepherd boy, but they remain chaste. Unlike harem life, they have refrained from indulging in all of the fruits and pleasures of covenant marriage, that is, sex and intimacy and pleasure, without committing to covenant obligation, right? They commit to covenant obligation first. Shulamith and her shepherd boy. That is the one man, one woman bond with oaths and pledge to covenant fidelity in front of God and man in a signing and sealing ceremony. And so consequently, Shulamith can languish sick with love for her shepherd boy while she goes through her time of probation in Solomon's harem. She's been selected because of her beauty. Is she fit for the harem? And will she submit willingly? Can this fine country beauty be seduced by all of the luxury and the ease, all of the glamour and glitter of harem life? And the promise of passion and pleasure in Solomon's bed? Or will she be faithful to the model of marriage established in the garden with Adam and Eve? Therefore, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. Amen, right? Will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, a wife, and they shall become one flesh. And thus faithful to the mystery of Christ and his church as well, which covenant models, marriage models. And we saw the dilemma that this oath request put the harem in, too. If they fulfilled it, there was an implicit rebuke of them in that it was possible to keep covenant and not succumb to Solomon's seduction. One could remain in love with their God-given covenant friend and lover. If they didn't bear the message, though, on the other hand, they broke faith with a fellow harem girl in her oath request. So the harem girls, the daughters of Jerusalem, that formerly distinguished title now being undercut, isn't it, as we move through this book? Understanding this, they demand to know, what's the big deal with this shepherd boy of hers? Leave that country bumpkin at home. Come join big city life in the harem. What is your beloved more than another beloved? The term beloved has been used frequently. What is now becoming apparent, what is betrayed in part here, is the vast gulf which has opened up between the understanding of beloved on the part of the harem and that understood by Shulamith. To the harem girls, a beloved was any attractive partner chosen for that night's bed. For Solomon, there were lots of them. While each girl might be unique and individual in her features and characteristics, once she was taken, there was a night of pleasure and intimacy. There'd be another, just as attractive, the next night. The very culture of harem life determined that this would be the attitude towards what defined a beloved. For the harem girls, a beloved was the next harem girl that Solomon wanted. That is why they can say with such cynicism, what is your beloved more than another beloved? In other words, men are six of one and half dozen of another, too. There's more than one fish in the sea. If this one goes away, there are plenty more where that came from. What is so special about your shepherd boy? And we'll see Shulamith's attitude beginning in verse 10, right? A radical departure from that of the harem. But it's important to see the collective attitude of the harem girls in contrast to that of the Shulamite girl. They acknowledge why she's there amongst them in the first place, almost beautiful among women. Despite being a brown-skinned country girl, she's nevertheless a stunning beauty who would most certainly grace Solomon's bed. That's why she was there. In fact, she might be the most beautiful among women in all of Israel, not hyperbole. So for Shulamith to invoke an oath promise from them was a serious matter. And thus their curiosity. What's so special about your beloved that you adjure us so? Has rock and roll harem life so jaded them that they cannot even imagine someone else committed to covenant love and marriage? Has it been so long that they've been captive daughters of Jerusalem and so long away from being daughters of their mothers at home? We've seen that allusion to her mother's inner sanctum, right? Which is an allusion to her womb as well. Behold what culture can do to a person, the seductive nature of culture, right? It's not always what it seems. Just this week, for example, Britney Spears, the aforementioned Britney Spears, asked a judge to end the conservatorship her father has had over her life, over her career, over her fortune since 2008. When Spears' father said, she was not mentally fit to handle her affairs. And a judge, indeed, granted that conservatorship, and he's been running her life ever since. But not with her best interest in mind. Her spokesperson, Rose McGowan, says that Spears' father has been abusive and controlling and using her $60 million fortune for himself. The once glamorous rock icon says that now she's reduced to a kind of slavery. And as NPR puts it, saying she is exploited, can't sleep, is depressed, and cries every day, unquote. Excuse me. Rock and roll harem life. Rock and roll harem life. That just updates it a few centuries, right? A few millennia. But share so much in common. Rock and roll harem life beckoned my daughters and my son in the 90s. I dare say it does so in every generation, in whatever iteration it appears. With greater power, the less of a Christian influence there is in that culture, too. The less of a Christian influence, the greater the Christian influence, the less the influence of the rock and roll culture. Have you learned that yet? We learned it by hard experience in our families over the decades, which is why it's crucial for the church not to retreat. Rather, it is crucial, I'm persuaded and convinced, that it is crucial for the church to labor mightily to create an alternative Christian culture. It simply is a prescription for failure to condemn and deplore what the world is tempting our families with and not offer them a biblical alternative. We can create, and the church in many places, many subcultures, is creating music, food, literature, movies, schools, styles, and institutions that compete and defeat those of a lost world. Read history, and you'll discover that we've done it before. The church has done it before. Join me in our history class this fall, beginning in October, and you'll see that the church has done it before. We've just retreated in the last 50, 60 years, but we're beginning to come out of our stupor and our sleep to create music and food, literature, movies, school styles, institutions that compete and defeat, if you will, those of a lost world. That is part of our calling. And that biblical model, if you will, is reflected in part in Shulamith's answer to the harem's curiosity. That brings us to point two, verses 10 to 16 of chapter 5. The harem's seduction. Seduction is not always in your face, is it? It can be very subtle. Playing upon vulnerabilities. The harem's seduction, peer pressure. While men are six of one and half a dozen of another, to you, harem girls, my shepherd boy stands apart from them. We come now to this famous song, if you will, this dedication to her shepherd boy. My shepherd boy stands apart from them. Shulamith answers the harem's query with another exquisite Hebrew poem. Another exquisite Hebrew poem. Read this. Ladies, read this to your spouse. And see how maybe his chin rises a little bit and he stands a little bit straighter, right? These are good poems to read to one another. There's one for husbands, there's one for wives. Another exquisite Hebrew poem, and this is beautiful Hebrew too. And this one's to him and his handsome physique and countenance. The idea of countenance here is important. That is the overall impression created by the presence of her beloved, her shepherd boy. And this approach, this mode of interpretation, which posits a shepherd boy, is called the shepherd boy. But from that description, he's more than a boy. He's not an adolescent just coming into his manhood. Rather, there's a maturity and beauty, if you will, if we can call it that, which is absent from the description of Solomon, too. This is a different description than that given by the harem girls to Solomon. Like her, for example, he stands out from the crowd, distinguished among 10,000, isn't he? My beloved is radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000. His head is the finest gold. His locks are wavy, black as a raven. There's allusion here, an allusion to the statue and head of gold in Daniel's vision of the kingdoms of the earth, and the subsequent image of gold that Nebuchadnezzar constructed too for the people to fall down. Some of the same phrasing and vocabulary. And then combined with his flowing locks, as Absalom's hair was described too, there's something iconic, if you will, about her beloved. Iconic. Unlike Nebuchadnezzar. Irony. His eyes are like doves beside streams of water, bathed in milk, sitting beside a full pool. The eyes. Doves are ubiquitously used to describe expressive eyes, not only here but elsewhere in Hebrew poetry as well. These eyes that are given a glistening quality, that's the sense of the water and the milk and the pools and the reflection and so forth, the idea of glistening eyes in the Middle Eastern sun. The eyes are the window to the soul, and her beloved's eyes are supremely expressive of his love for her. His cheeks and his lips are described, as you cast your eyes over the text, his cheeks and lips are described in terms of fragrant spices, and the sensuous quality of his mouth is given in terms of lilies, which, when in full bloom, appeal to the senses as they grace the water. And then his arms, trunk, and legs are described in images of strength and beauty. Strength and beauty. Rods of gold for his arms. Polished ivory, his trunk. And alabaster columns, his legs. And all are adorned with jewels and sapphires and gold. The overall effect of the body is one of beauty and attractiveness. Now, there were no gyms and fitness clubs in those days. Samson's sauna wouldn't be franchised until centuries later. So he probably didn't work out with weights and a treadmill in front of full-length mirrors every day after sitting in front of a computer screen for 8 hours, okay? Rather, there were very few sedentary lifestyles in those days, and his physical beauty was tempered by the rigors of country life. And his overall appearance is like Lebanon, she says, like Lebanon. This would have evoked images of beauty in the mind of the contemporary. Lebanon, when first approached from the south, from Palestine, even today the view of Lebanon is stunning, would awe the traveler. And this was true especially in the ancient world. From contemporary descriptions, from a variety of authors, pagan authors as well. Apparently, historians speculate that this region was far greener and moister and more verdant at this period than it is today. Thousands of years have transpired since then. The climate is considerably drier and hotter than it was at that time. The snow-capped mountains of Lebanon at this time were covered with forests of cedar and dotted with other stretches of flora as well. Additionally, in the spring, fields of flowers covered the meadows of Lebanon. The general impression was that one was approaching Eden as he traveled northward from Israel. So, the beloved is, in conclusion, altogether desirable. And she is emphatic in the Hebrew. Beloved mine is this. This is my beloved. There is intended to be a sharp, emphatic distinction between the beloved of the harem, which is Solomon for them, right? A stud, but nevertheless, not a beloved in the sense that the shepherd boy is for her. And importantly, what is more, he is my friend. That simple prosaic word, but nevertheless, he is my friend. That is, there's a bond between them that cannot be duplicated in the harem bed. Oh, daughters of Jerusalem, you see how derisive this term is becoming in describing the harem girls? Meant to be. Wow. How then would these girls respond to this dude? They would resign from the harem and all go back home and seek out their own shepherd boys? Would that be what would happen? Let's see. Point three. The harem's seduction. Culture can seduce, can it not? Seduce and persuade and corrupt as well as strengthen and build up. The harem's seduction. Well, if your shepherd boy stands apart from the rest, might you make him available to us for our enjoyment? That's the upshot of their response. Can you make him available to us for our enjoyment too? They're not others. Too, by the way. Yeah, just take your eraser out and take out that generic others. This is the harem speaking. This is harem culture speaking. We see from their response that nothing has changed with them. And they act as only habituated harem girls can. Can we get in on this shepherd boy action? Where is he? We want to see him too. We will follow through on seeking out your beloved. Where has he gone? Where has he turned? But it will not be to apprise him of your lovesickness. No, we are interested in knowing him as our beloved too. That's the sense of that we may seek him with you. Behold the definition of incorrigible. Can a leopard change its spots? Do dogs return to their vomit? If the daughters of Jerusalem are to be taught of one man, one woman, covenant love, it will be a long road of patient teaching and a removal altogether from the harem culture. They've just had a poignant picture drawn for them of a true intimate love and passion for a true beloved, a friend, so valuable. Inculcate this. Teach this to your kids. The culture will take them if you don't. A true, intimate love and passion for a true beloved, a friend, which they immediately turn into all they know of love. That is, that furtive occasional nights of sex and passion with a stud king interspersed with long, boring days of harem life with the girls, right? As secure and comfortable as they may be otherwise. How can Shulamith communicate her disenchantment with harem life in comparison with the promise of covenant love with her shepherd boy? Full-grown shepherd boy. She will expand on it next week. But for now, we do see some abiding truths about true and false culture. First of all, we see that we're beginning to see in a fuller picture. You know, this is incremental too. You have to take each of these sermons one at a time and see how these things are being built. The case is being built both ways incrementally, week by week, seduction by seduction, piece by piece. But we're beginning to see that it is within the one man, one woman covenant bond that true love, true intimacy, yea, true friendship is found. The two shall become one flesh. Not the three, not the four, much less the 700 wives and 300 concubines. No wonder he lapsed into idolatry. Rock and roll harem life. Despite how glitzy and how appealing and how fun it may seem, rock and roll harem life cannot but lead to disillusionment and death and an emptiness, a barrenness, a desert which will always seek but never find. The rock and roll harem girls of our day know this. They know this to their souls. That demon-possessed Lady Gaga knows this to her soul now. She has to sleep with people in her room because she gets terrified at night when demons assault her, she says. Britney Spears knows this to her soul as she weeps herself to sleep every night. Madonna knows this to the core of her being as she seeks and seeks for God in that devilish spiritism of Jewish Kabbalah. Rock and roll harem life cannot but lead to disillusionment and death and emptiness and loneliness that will always seek but never find. But it takes more than just a revulsion of and a pushing away of one culture. We must create, as God has given us, we must create alternatives. The best way we can create this culture of covenant love for our children and for the world to see is to model it in our own marriages. You're asking an awful lot now, Pastor. We've been married for 35 years, and something's lost. You know, it's not rock solid and white hot, our love anymore. Oh, it doesn't mean it can't be. Is there any poetry in your marriage left? You have some good material here, some good material here to work with to help bring that back. Love your spouses, men. Love your wives as Christ loved the church. And wives, submit to your husbands as Christ does, or as the church does to Christ. These are good things to practice and to pray over and to develop. Do you find joy in family? Do you find joy in being a father? That's one thing, one way to model genuine Christian covenant love is to enjoy your role, to take with great zeal and enthusiasm your role either as a wife or as a husband. And the feedback, the return from your children as they begin to establish families of their own will be very rewarding. Speaking with my son at the baseball game this past week on Father's Day, enjoying myself at the baseball game, but talked with John for a little while, and we were just talking about how fun it was to be fathers. And those of you that know John know he loves being a father, loves being a daddy, can't wait to get home. And he said he had that model for him. That was very gratifying to have him come back and say he had that model for him in his family, too. And, that was me. Yeah. So I take great pleasure in that. It's very gratifying to look back and see that and have that affirmation come back to you. That will be so gratifying to you in days to come. Don't waste your time. Don't be discouraged. Despite your faults and your foibles and those things that hold you back, nevertheless, your kids will see. And they will develop and go out and make families of their own too. Create a positive model and cultivate your spouses too, in the same way that Shulamith and the shepherd boy are cultivating one another to develop that love. And model this for your kids and your family. It won't continue if you don't. Create the alternatives to the rock and roll culture out there. Because after all, it should and does reflect the love and intimacy of Christ and his church too. Our marriages do precisely that as well. Paul says this is the mystery that he is talking about. That your marriage reflects the relationship, the love and the intimacy of Christ and his church. Do you know Christ? People talk about, oh yes, I know Christ. I love Christ. And we have personal relationships with Christ and so on and so forth. Well, what do you think that is based on, right? What do you think models that? How do you think we have flesh and blood representations of that love and intimacy? It's in our marriages. It's crucial to create this alternative to hand on and to pass on to the next generation. And put to shame the rock and roll culture, even as Shulamith is putting to shame the harem culture of her day. Your marriage could reflect the love and intimacy of Christ and his church. If it doesn't already, keep working at it. Have faith. And God will do it. Well, let's come out of that place where we see that love reflected between Christ and his church. We see it in the body and blood of the bread and wine of the supper of the Lord.